Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening and welcome to The Man's Voice here on Sunday, which is November 19th, a few days before Thanksgiving. I hope everyone is doing well. Some of the places have gotten pretty chilly out there. The winter months are coming in. But we are here today and we're wanting to talk about things that are going on. Most of the news in today is this Al Franken and Roy Moore's. But there are a lot of things happening because of these. But let's talk about that for a few minutes first, and then I want to talk about something that just came out because of these accusations. Now, there's accusations all over. I know that Russell Simmons got one this morning. Someone said he did something to her. And I think what I don't understand is where is the line in terms of, because it's two ways. So if you just touch a girl on the shoulder sometime, but the one this morning wasn't that much to me, but she's interpreting it as. So I guess I want to open it up to the panel. Talk about this. First of all, Al Franken and Roy Moore. Roy Moore is saying he didn't do any of this stuff. So what you guys, what about you, Frank, what are you thinking on all this stuff? And where I want to go is all the out stuff that's going to come out of it. Frank, are you there? I don't know. Frank just dropped off. His phone must have died. So what about you, John? What do you think?
Well, I think you got two different things going on here right now. With the Roy Moore thing, Judge Moore, you've got allegations from an attorney representing women who also had a bunch of accusations against Trump too that nothing has been proved. Now, the difference with Franken is that you actually have a photo of the actual assault that happened and an apology from him right now. And the funniest thing is he's calling for himself to be investigated. You're going from allegations to proof. It's two different things. And I keep hearing everyone saying it's the same thing. It's the same thing. And Al Franken doesn't need to resign. But the same exact things they're saying why Judge Moore should resign is the exact same thing that Al Franken got caught doing with the photographic proof.
Right. I see Bruce is on the line. I thought you weren't going to be on the line. Bruce, how are you doing?
Well, this show is that important, David, that I made it.
Well, thank you so much, sir.
I'm crawling in from the railroad, but I made it.
Well, good, sir. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. I missed the setup. I heard John's response, but I'm not sure what he was responding to.
Well, we're talking about these allegations from all these women, for all these high-profile people, Al Franken, Roy Moore, but there's so many more that are coming out this morning. Every day there seems to be another one that somebody's saying, well, I got sexually abused or groped or something by that person. And it's just, moving around. I think everybody's trying to get a piece of the action. I think a lot of it has to do with how much money I'm going to get out of this.
There's some of that. You want my take on my observation?
Yes.
I'm starting to wonder, is this the opening of a break in the dam of frustration and people holding things back and truly going to start uncovering the veil back from maybe the entertainment field and the political field of all the things that people might have suspected have been happening, or is it going to be an overreaction, Me Too and a lot of stuff that isn't really true? I don't know, but the sense I get is to some extent the veil is being pulled back on something maybe a number of people have suspected all along, that those power, abuse power, absolutely, you know, that along those lines. And this is part of, this is the nasty side of what can happen if you don't keep your head on straight.
But the casting couch has been there since I was a kid. Everyone knew there was things going on to get jobs and stuff. It was this casting couch. But,
true. But does it make it good? But does it make it right? No.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't make it right, exactly. But my why? Because now everybody is being abused. You know, I mean, everybody you talk to has coming up with something. It might be putting an end to the casting couch. But my question is, all the byproducts of this is, you know, going to be kind of crazy, don't you think? What about you, Ron? What are you thinking?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bruce. Go ahead.
No, that you're right. And let Ron answer. But I was just going to, you're right, that can happen. But if it truly starts opening people up in the right sort of way, whatever that means to each of us, so that the people that are there are saying, you know what, now I have enough guts to say what really happened to me, that's not a bad thing to get that. If nothing more, the person that was harmed, getting that out and off their chest, so to speak, maybe that's a good therapeutic thing for them, and it also brings the people that are doing these things they shouldn't do to at least to a level of awareness. What do you think, Ron?
I can't disagree with that. I mean, all these allegations. I do have to say, though, that I firmly believe that a person is innocent until proven guilty. So I don't know if the burden of proof, I guess it lies on the accusers. And it's not the other way around that the person being accused has to prove that they're innocent. So, you know, I think it's wrong if it's true, all these things that are coming out. I don't think it's right. But, you know, there's also a part of me that feels like this is getting a little bit ridiculous. I mean, we've all heard about Bush Senior, you know, being accused of groping. And I'm like, you know, come on. I mean, if it's true, I mean, shame on him. But, you know, I've heard, you know, the reasons why women may have thought that he was groping them. I mean,
he said it was true. He did indicate that it was true. Yeah, he apologized. He apologized. It has something to do with his health and his, yeah. But he's touched their butt and he's apologized.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that. I haven't been in touch with the news in a while because I've been very busy with work. But what I was going to say, I mean, in a way, I mean, the groping, how far do you go? I mean, I've been groped by my colleagues, women at work, you know, messing around. So, I mean, is that right? I mean, is it okay for a woman to grope a man?
No.
We had a conversation earlier. No, we came up with it. It should be a two-way streak, if you know.
Yeah, so it doesn't bother.
There was one guy that came out that said that he was.
Hey, guys, I want to laugh at you just for a moment. You all know that it's taboo to touch a female without a female's permission. You all know that. It is different from male-to-male touching, but we all know that it's taboo to touch a female.
And it's also the other way around.
What about the other way around, yeah?
I'm not a female, so I can't answer that question, but I do know all my life that it's taboo to touch a female.
And I don't disagree. I guess my question is, if it's taboo, does that make it illegal? Can you go to jail for that?
Well, we know that, and when the word taboo in my society meant that people were going to frown on you and look down upon you and think that you were irregular or a person that doesn't fit the society. And so you may not go to jail, but you would certainly be ostracized, and you would certainly be looking at you as some type of pervert.
Well, guys, let me, can I still, can I add,
sure,
though, isn't it a shame if our society has come to the point where someone might say, and you, we may all laugh at it, but might say, well, you shook my hand, you touched me, I didn't give you permission to do that, or you put your hand on my shoulder, or you, I know, you know, the things we think are normal contact that I think in a lot of ways the human psyche wants and needs. If we become such a sterile society that we can't even think of getting within an inch of somebody without fear of being prosecuted somehow, or somehow, as you say, Frank, looked down upon, we are a sick society. That's really bad if that's where we're going.
Well, let me take you here, because in light of all these recent widespread allegations of sexual abuse, the Girl Scouts of America is stressing the importance of setting some boundaries. So they posted on their webpage that we as adults they're urging the parents not to force their kids to hug relatives this holiday season. So they're saying, have you ever insisted on your uncle who just got here, go give you a big hug, and or your aunt who gave that nice toy, go give her a kiss when you're worried your child might not offer affection on her own? If yes, you might want to consider the urge to do that in the future. But the Girl Scouts website reads, telling your child that she owes someone a hug, either just because she hasn't seen the person in a while or because they gave her a gift, can set the stage for her questioning whether she owes another person any type of physical affection when they're brought to dinner or done something else for her later in her life. What do you think about that? And they're posting it because I was thinking the outcomes of what's going on is going to shape our world, sort of. Jeremiah, what are your thoughts on that?
I agree with the gift part a little bit there. I'm not understanding if you haven't seen your family in such a long time, or anyone that's a part of the family, let's just say you don't give them a hug. But as far as giving your daughter a gift, I'm very punctual on how – I don't have any kids, but if I had a daughter, I would be very punctual on how she treats certain situations as far as hugging. I don't want her going to school to hug a little kid. Oh, you gave me a pencil. Thank you very much. Give me a great hug. Like, you know, I'm very careful what my daughter would be doing. So I agree with the gift aspect, because I don't want my daughter thinking that every time somebody gives you something, you give them something in return. So I would agree with that. The other portion I disagree with.
What do you disagree with? You know, so what they're saying is,
I disagree with the part that's saying that if you haven't seen your uncle in 5 years, you have to give him a hug. You want to teach your daughter to be somewhat reluctant to do certain things, especially when it comes to touchy-touchy. For one, she's not an adult. For two, she can be taken advantage of if she is a teenager, a child, a toddler, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, be very careful in what you do with people, which I agree with.
But don't you think when I grew up, that was par for the course, especially in my family, when relatives came over, we didn't know, you know, my mother or father would say, oh, go give them a hug or something. Don't you think that's also teaching affection to the right person, that there should be a more conversation afterwards maybe, but to not let them do that? You think that's the way it should be, that they don't learn family affection?
I mean, it depends. It depends on the family. Family affection is necessary, but it depends on to the degree, because – you know, just like we're going to go back a little bit, when a young lady says, I've been groped or I've been touched and this and this and that, sometimes women think it's okay to do so. Like, let me back it up a little bit. Okay, let's just say my daughter. You need to let them know, like, even though that's your uncle, you have adults, whether it's your father, your uncle, your grandfather, they're touching little girls inappropriately, for one. Right. So I believe that I would teach my daughter, yes, you can hug your family members, but still be careful about, like, how do you do it? You know what I mean? Like me, I would tell my daughter, never sit on the man's lap. That's kind of on a same page to me. I don't know. I'm very cautious of what you have to be very cautious of what you tell your daughter, because she would grow up with it in her. To me.
So you would tell your daughter never to sit on your relative's lap?
Yes.
What about Santa Claus?
No, no. Yeah. Forget a Santa Claus. No pictures with Santa Claus on the lap. Negative.
Really?
And see, yeah, even me, like, say if I'm sitting on a couch and my
I don't want you sitting on Santa Claus' lap.
say my six-year-old daughter walked towards me, I have my legs open, and she comes between my legs. I wouldn't allow her to do that, because if I allow her to do it to me, she'll do it to another man.
Wow.
To me, it's very
inappropriate. I think what you're seeing here is, it's more the destruction of the family here. I hate to kind of say this, but there's a few of us here on the panel that actually do know somebody who's actually in prison right now, who had done something to a family member, and that came right out of the blue. I mean, I would have never expected it from this individual, but. I participate in one of the few sports out there where, it's males and females compete in the same sport, in auto racing. And I actually had a female teammate. And I think there's also, mixed doubles and tennis and that type of thing. But, after a race, and she ran in a different class than I did, and she ended up winning a championship. And, to go up and hug and high five and everything else, you've just done battle for, 20, 30 laps on a racetrack wrestling cars around. And I says, you get out of the car, the first thing you want to go over is congratulate that person. At that point, I'm not racing against a female or I'm racing against another opponent. And to treat that person with respect, there's those of us guys who have survived, crashing into each other will hug after a crash and make sure everybody's okay. And so, to sit there and have to go up after, like I said, after you've done battle with somebody and, right away you're going to be concerned about somebody, going up and hugging somebody, that they're going to take it the wrong way. I mean, that's ridiculous.
I would agree with you, John. And don't we, are we looking to go towards a direction where, if we're going to regulate everything and legislate that this is wrong and this is wrong, then we're taking the emotion and the thought process out of all of it. You're telling a parent you can't decide and you can't guide your children to learn what proper affection is, so therefore we're going to regulate it. That's not the way the legislators and the legislative branch of a government is not the parent. And granted, we have great parents, we have bad parents, but they're still parents with children. It's their responsibility, and it should be their chance to guide that child and to guide them into a position that says you never touch anybody anywhere, anyway, anyhow, or there's always a suspicion that something bad is going to happen is wrong, as much as ignoring it is wrong. That's where a parent comes in and helps them mold into someone that knows what is right and what is wrong.
Don, are you up on what we're talking about? Can you jump in?
Yes, I've been listening to what's being said, and boy, what a wonderful topic you have here. I think it boils down to morals. A man's got to know. That you can't molest children, you can't grope children. You gotta have morals. It's an inside job, And the thing is, I agree with what you just said. I forgot who said it, but I'm gonna call him the young fellow. He's the young fellow of the group. He said he would let his daughter. Pardon?
Jeremiah.
Hey, Jeremiah, I agree with you, brother. You are so right. I wouldn't let my daughters just sit on people's lap either, man, because you don't know who doesn't have the right morals or not. The world's going crazy, man. The world's going crazy. That's what's happening.
So you're in the impression the morals and the
I like to think that the world has been like that for years and years and years, and what we've done is – we've covered it up and hidden it, okay? But this stuff that's happening today has always been with us. We just haven't dealt with it, in my mind.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
I agree. It's been there for a long time.
But would you say it's been there at the extent it is now? It seems to be weird.
We started putting people in jail, incestuous relationships in the family, generally by a parent to a child. And there are some religious organizations that have had followers who did those type of things. They've been on televisions. There's priests that have been involved in, this process, preachers. This guy's a judge. We've got judges involved in it. We've got all the people in our society at various different levels involved in it. And some of them don't believe there's anything wrong with it. I remember ministering to a person who was who had a very high security clearance, and he was busted with child pornography on the internet. And what I was trying to do was get him to church, the Christian thing, trying to get him to church. And, at some point in the conversation, he was still trying to justify that men look at Marilyn Monroe and things like that, and it was okay for him, to do. Okay, so I'm going to tell you that, and I handled units like this when I was in the Navy. I was, it really works on your mental capacity and your physical capacity with people that actually molest their children. That there are, so we've hidden this, and we've got to deal with the society, and somehow maybe our country is a little sicker than other countries because of how we handle sex and how we deal with it. I kind of think that's one of our problems as well, our bodies, on how we deal with our bodies. For instance, in Europe, you can go to a lot of beaches and everybody's naked. And that's not always a pretty thing, of course. In our country, because, the guy that's 89, he wants to be naked hanging out there also, and he's not done one push-up,
go to Miami and go to Holover Beach. You probably won't go back to the beach again for a long time.
So I think in our society we have to deal with those. Part of it is what we perceive as our Christian values or our Western Christian values. And you're right about touching. If you touch someone's shoulders, that may not be inappropriate, but the wrong person touching somebody's shoulder could be inappropriate. And the same thing with the car race. If you go out and hug a lady, I remember in my day when I was growing up being Afro-American, if I hugged someone who was actually white, I'd probably get arrested and put in jail. So we all know that we've got to restrain ourselves, and some people do and some others don't.
Well, here's another couple observations, guys, is as I think you said, Frank, it's always been there, and the degree is there up and down and back and forth. And I just think right now a lot of this is coming out in the open. It's always been there. It's not like it's all an outbreak right now. I think some people are coming out that this happened back, as you've heard on the stories, back in their childhood or back in their teenage years or back in their early 20s. I can't remember back that far, of course. And then the other thing I'd like your advice on, guys, is I'm a guy that is kind of a hugging kind of guy, and I know I got to be careful, but I'll have women come up to me that I know, and they'll say, come on, give me a hug. And that. So now you got me thinking, should I do that? Should I not do that? What should I do?
Aren't we saying that we have become, because of technology, we're becoming a nation of zombies who don't touch and feel and talk to each other? So why are we now saying we shouldn't be doing this? I think
are we becoming a sterile society? That, and I don't mean it in the literal sense. But if we're sterile to that, all kinds of an emotion, I believe that we were wired to be, to some degree, appropriately affectionate to each other. And it's different for different people, but some sort of affection. I don't think we're supposed to be isolated and never show affection towards each other. I really don't.
I think technology, though, is maybe taking us in that direction. And this, I think this is all kind of in the same vein as, you know, parents spanking their kids, which we've talked about on the show before, and school principals, you know, paddling kids. I mean, I got my butt paddled hundreds of times when I was in school. But, you know, if a principal tries to do that today, they're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah.
You
know? Well,
remember, they used to drill holes in the paddle so they could swing it harder.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
They've been sued now.
But, you know, guys, I think you guys are kind of playing this thing off right now, right? This is the situation. I think that David brought up was about a judge. And, you know, he could have added a current president, a past president. He did indicate a senator. And we know there's movie moguls. And so I don't think this is the same as example as paddling or anything else. I think that this is a conduct that we've had as guys, and that we perpetuate this conduct, and it's a secret society, and that we belong to secret societies when we don't reveal it. Because, I mean, it's the same conversation that Billy Bush had with Donald Trump. And it was a, you know, it was the same picture that the Senator Al Franken had when he was, you know, either groping or playing like he was groping the lady when she was asleep. It's the same one that Bill Cosby has been accused of. So I wouldn't play it off. I think they're serious matters, and I think that we belong to a secret society, and we don't reveal it. And I, as well as some of you, I've heard of plenty of cases in my family, or at least multiple cases, where someone has said that they've been molested as a child, all right, by a relative. So those are the things that are actually happening, and I think we shouldn't throw dirt on top of it and try to cover it up.
Hey, I got a question to ask. What is the difference? What is the difference? Somebody help me out. I need to be educated. What is the difference between what Bill Cosby did 30, 40 years ago and what this judge did 30, 40 years ago?
You mean the guy running for office, Roy Moore?
Roy Moore. What is the difference in what Roy Moore did versus what Bill Cosby did?
I don't think there is a difference, really.
There isn't any difference. But Bill Cosby lost his integrity, his television show, his livelihood, his revenue. And here we are, got people saying, I know he may have did it, I believe these women, but I'm still going to vote for them. My God, how can you say something like that when my morality is on the back burner in replacing with politics? That's ridiculous.
Well, I got a question. One of the women who accused him, he oversaw her divorce case. So why didn't she say something 20 years ago while he was overseeing that? Why did she wait till now?
She was afraid.
Oh, come on.
I find it
kind of amusing that, you know, we've got these, you know, all these superstars that are coming out now in the entertainment industry who are all now, you know, they're all successful millionaires, multimillionaires. They've all got their careers. Nothing can harm them now. And all of a sudden they finally grew a set and they go after Weinstein. Now, on the political side, you have a bunch of women here who are now looking for a payday out of these politicians. I mean, we do know that there's, what, $15 million set aside for, you know, to stop or to pay off these sexual harassments, to keep them quiet. So, you know, you've got two different ends of the spectrum here. You've got the entertainment industry where the people doing all the accusing are already very successful and nothing can hurt them now to go after these people. And then on the political side, you have a bunch of people that all of a sudden now 30, 40 years later are looking for the big, you know, payout out of this $15 million fund that they keep.
Hey, but John, let me ask you this. You're a very intelligent, opinionated guy, which I respect. Please answer my question. What's the difference between Roy Moore and Bill Cosby?
Well, Bill Cosby had, from what I heard on the case, is that he actually drugged these women. You know, so that there's a difference right there. I mean, he made them incapacitated and then took advantage of them. So, you know, what they're saying here is that, you know, he did it when supposedly when they were teenagers and when he was in his 30s. But, you know, we don't have any indication that they were drugged or anything else or, you know, anything actually happened to them.
One of the other issues is the ones that Bill Cosby with were older women, and these are younger women. So I think it should be it would seem to me that these women that are complaining now are complaining that this happened when they were teenage girls, which I think is worse or it should be the same as the drug piece. I mean, they're both equal to doing something that shouldn't have been done. I haven't heard from you, Ron. What are you thinking? Ron, are you there? Just took a break. What about Jeremiah? What you think? What are you thinking about?
No, I was just listening to what you guys were saying. But I just think if it takes you this long to come out with something, you want some type of reward. These guys have millions of dollars set aside, like everyone else said. But I can understand that you say, "Oh, it was fear or scared," but a lot of these guys wasn't like a power. So if you're just an actor or a comedian or something like that, you don't have power. So why would you be scared to tell the truth and tell what happened to you? So I don't know. I think
okay,
they rated for the. They,
yeah, the where we all started was this Girl Scout telling their parents to watch with their. Young girls do for the holidays, don't force them to hug relatives and things like that. So that's where we started. And I think we came to the conclusion that it is within each family member and it's with, you know, the families, but keep an eye. And for those that are listening, because I know a lot of families are going, well, where did they go with that subject? What's the outcome? I get that our outcome was that we are saying that families should pay attention to this, but within each family, based on the family logic, you know, allow it or don't allow it. Is that what we said, Bruce?
Well, as you were laying that out, David, I was thinking there's two sides to this coin. We all know and we've all witnessed children, the innocence of children, which should not be taken advantage of, but the innocence of children that shows us, gives us a peek that the way kind of like I say we're wired is a lot of kids want to be affectionate. And so if we're going to teach children, observe children, that if we kind of force them to be affectionate or hug or whatever your case may be, that's not right. But then find out why it is. And also don't deter them from, if they want to be affectionate to grandma or grandpa or mom or dad or a sibling or so forth. I wouldn't be one to say that, oh no, you can't do that. You can't, that's not proper anymore. That to me would be just as almost as damaging. We as parents have to help them understand what is right and what is wrong. And not doing or doing can be equally damaging. That's why they look to us to arm them or guide them, train them, educate them to know what the difference is between right and wrong. And if the moral fiber of the country now has changed the rules, then we've got to help them understand how the rules have changed. That's our responsibility.
Right. I agree with you. Because I think that subject needs to be defined by every father who's sitting there listening to our conversation. Because I could see a very shy child and relatives come over, you might have to give a nudge, you know, to go tell your it's my brother, go give him a hug or something. I can see that happening. I mean, that's the way I grew up, but I think it helps to teach the child, you know, more than the negativity. But I think it's going to have to be among each one who's listening, all the young men out there who know their families. They're the ones going to have to watch it, and they're the ones going to have to leave. But I want to change the subject a little bit. I have a question for Frank. It's something I've been following, and I don't want to keep a lot of time on it. I just want an answer to this question. Argentina lost a submarine, and it just lost it on Wednesday, and they don't know where it is. Wait a minute, Frank just dropped out.
It's underwater.
Well,
I know.
And I know they got signals. They got signals from them, didn't it?
But the signal died. You don't know where the signal is.
Oh,
I thought, you know, one of the things we kept saying is we think we're more technologically ahead of time than we really are. To me, how can you lose a submarine? How can you lose a submarine out there? Frank's back. Frank, the question is, there's a submarine lost under there. How long can that stay like that?
Well, it's a diesel-electric submarine, so you got a couple problems. One problem is they can only stay underwater for – I mean, they can stay on the bottom of the water maybe 4 or 5 days. If they do certain things, they have to lay down in their cots. They can't work. They can't move. They've got to burn some oxygen candles, and you know, it's going to be hard breathing. The breathing is so hard under those conditions that you actually feel like knives are poking in your chest. But that's what you do when you're laying on the bottom. Somewhere. Now, you can only lay so deep in the water, so that's the other problem. If you're in, you know, let's say 1,500 feet of water or deeper, you may have a significant problem. So the U.S. is sending out some rescue vessels that are capable of attaching to the submarine and extracting people from there. But typically, if you're in very deep water, that submarine's going to go ahead and it's going to come apart, basically.
Are you saying, Frank, did they find the sub, or is it still lost?
No, it was still lost. My report that I had today, it was still lost. And it's a diesel-electric submarine built, I think, in 1980 by the Germans. So those ships generally last a long time, and they're usable for a long time. But what happens is they don't make oxygen. Typically, that type of ship does not make its own oxygen. So what you have to do is you're basically laying at the bottom in a tube, just like in a mine. And with the exception, you do have some devices to create some oxygen. A little bit, yeah. And you do have some things that you've been trained how to minimize. So you're laying there quiet as possible, not making anything. Everybody's in their bunks. And if your ship is still airtight, you know, if it hasn't been breached by, you know, a torpedo going off inside or running into a seamount, and, you know, even then, if you run into a seamount, you could stop the flooding and save one part of the ship, and the other part of the ship, of course, is lost. So those are things that all the scenarios that we typically go through as submarine people.
Wow. None of them sound good.
Well, you know, you could have flooding. The way a submarine works is you could have flooding in one compartment. Normally, there's three or more compartments on the ship, and there are watertight doors between the compartments. So sometimes you got to just save somebody, and you have to, you know, tie off the ship and kill a few friends to save a larger number. So that is a possibility that you could do that as well. And those people, just like, you know, just like in mining.
Well, so I guess, wow. So the people that get, never mind. I don't want to go there. I don't want to know.
Go ahead.
Well,
go ahead.
How do you
what
know
was the question?
When you cut off, is it by rank?
What happens, David, is that in certain conditions, when you walk through a hallway door on a submarine, on certain conditions, battle stations, things like that, those doors are automatically locked and then reopened when you pass through them. Okay, but when it is an emergency, you typically sound the alarm and you start locking those devices. And then there's gauges you can see there, like a gauge that would you can leveling gauge where you can see there's moisture inside the room, the next compartment over, and you can't stop the flooding. You also have an idea of because you're taking on weight on the ship, so that you know how fast you're flooding, and the flooding has to do with how deep you're going to, how it's moving you to the bottom. So to stop that flooding, you sometimes have to secure a compartment, even though there's people in that compartment that are alive. You can't open the compartment door because it would take the rest of the ship down with it. So those are things that have happened throughout the lives of submariners, particularly in World War II and earlier wars. So, yeah, you can look through the compartment. There's a glass in there that's through the door. You can see that it's flooding. You can see that you can't stop the flooding. And those guys are generally in there working, trying to stop the flooding also. So that's one of the things that, you know, all of us know how to do. But sometimes the hole is just too large and the pressure, the sea pressure is just too significant. And so what you do is you seal off that compartment and you save the rest of the ship, two-thirds of the ship or one-half of the ship.
Wow. Well, let's pray that they find them. But I think what I wanted to get to was I think the world, myself, thought that we were in a time where these kinds of things couldn't happen, where you could lose a submarine with the technology that we have, that we would be able to get right to it and save it. I don't think I did. I was under the impression we were more advanced than what it seems because looking at Puerto Rico.
David, though, remember, a lot of our, quote, high-tech advances, how much, think about this, how much of all the high-tech medicine we have today is based on a lot of trial and error? It's not foolproof. Not everybody survives and not everybody dies. And not every time one technique works on some, one won't on another. Just because we have all this technology doesn't mean something can't be lost or something can't be found, right?
I guess not. But I'm talking about look at Puerto Rico recently. I didn't think we would be out of power this long. I thought
that's another story, isn't it?
Well, look at Flint, Michigan. I wouldn't think that we'd be out of water that long. But guess what? We've got people that have money and they don't want to spend it on someone else because they want to keep their dough. Remy Fossil Latif. So
amen.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not surprised by Puerto Rico at all. There was a general, Andre, who did the Katrina deal, who kept saying that there wasn't enough people. You know, he had 30,000 people. We had, at one point, like 9,000, went up to 16,000 to take care of Puerto Rico. So there wasn't enough people and enough interest on the part of the people of the United States to avert the electrical and water disaster. And we're going to, you know, have more deaths as a result of that. And the submarine thing, you know, the submarine has many devices to communicate. I have been personally involved in a submarine lost at sea on the staff side, on the communication side, where we lost contact with the submarine. We recovered the submarine. So that was a good thing about it. But sometimes you can lose contact with a submarine, but a submarine does have emergency communications. So if it's sitting on the bottom, it can release a buoy from the front part of the ship typically with a cable on it, and it'll send out a message basically saying submarine sunk here. And submarines, depending on the depth of water, do have some capability to make what we call a free ascent. And that's basically to go into a lock compartment, flood the lock compartment, and then open the outer hatch, and then come up. But you can only do that at limited depth, so 100 feet, 150 feet, that type of thing. So, and of course, this rescue vehicle that the United States is dispatching, which is basically they fly that out on a large aircraft to the local site and then put it on the ship and then take it out. But they've got to identify where the submarine is.
All right, let's change up a little bit. I wanted to just talk about that. Our prayers go out to the people that are stuck in that submarine. I hope they get rescued. They've been there since Wednesday. And based on what Frank was saying, it's about time right now to
Running out of time.
They're running out of time really quick. I wanted to talk about the UCLA players, but unless somebody else wants to talk about something else they have, anybody want to bring up anything?
Only thing I would add to the Puerto Rican situation is I had the privilege of having a job that kept me down there for most of or a major part of 5 or 6 years, and I quickly learned that the psyche and the can do and the work at anything of the Puerto Rican people is just amazing. So I know no matter what they have to work with, they're all down there working their you-know-whats off trying to make it work. And that it is another world down there, even though my time down there was quite a while ago. I get a sense that it hasn't changed much over those years. So, but the people down there are incredibly friendly and hardworking. So if anybody can make do with what they have, they will.
And, you know, they are. It hasn't changed that much, Bruce. I was there a couple years ago. And what's amazing is a lot of people are leaving Puerto Rico and moving to Florida. Orlando is being invaded by Puerto Rico citizens like never before. So is Miami. So we're seeing an influx of people moving to the mainland like never before, and it's going to be an issue that's going to be coming up more and more.
Yeah, and I'll get off of it, but is it Orlando and Miami because of the airports? Is that why?
I think because it's the closest proximity to Puerto Rico. Not Orlando. Well, that's where they're going, Orlando.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a big established Puerto Rican community already in Orlando.
Oh, is that it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, New York City has a lot of Puerto Ricans, too. I think outside of Puerto Rico, there's more Puerto Ricans in New York City than anywhere else. So I would imagine in the end, a lot of them are going to be moving to New York.
Yeah.
Well, why do they want to come here?
To get away from what they're experiencing in Puerto Rico. Like a lot of people want to leave Flint, but they can't.
But if things are so good in Puerto Rico before the hurricanes, then why would they want to come here? I mean,
because
we're criticizing the recovery effort.
It's a better way of life. And if they're part of the United States, it's a better way of life. If I were in Puerto Rico and I was experiencing what they went through, I would pack my family up and we would move to the mainland as well. And I think you would as well.
Okay, well, you made my point, because if they were moving here and established all these communities before the hurricanes hit, then I guess Puerto Rico wasn't as good as what everybody is saying, and now they're complaining because we're not building it to be a better place like the mainland fast enough.
Oh, okay.
I mean, am I wrong?
I'm not sure. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, if it's such a great place to live and everything is, you know, hunky-dory and it's Caribbean paradise, why would you want to come to the States and establish a place to live here when everything was so beautiful down there?
Okay.
And now we're getting criticized because they don't have electricity and they don't have water. Well, it would seem to me that if that's the case, then it probably wasn't very good to start off with, and it seems like they're basically starting from scratch.
Well, first of all, you know, they are all U.S. citizens, right? You're aware of that.
Well, that's fine, but, I mean, Michigan sucks in the winter, but I don't move out because it sucks in the winter and move someplace south.
The reason why they're moving out is because some members of some of the families there do not have running water or electricity, all right, and they're not planning on getting it, you know, there to them for a year or more. So some of them are elderly.
You were talking they moved here before the hurricanes hit and destroyed the place.
Yeah, I'm going to give you that information. I worked for the Postmaster New York in the 70s. At that time, there were more Puerto Ricans than lived in New York, because the Postmaster New York is also the postmaster for Puerto Rico. That's because most of the mail at that time went from the islands to New York City. So people live in New York City because they can get jobs. And the reason why you can't hardly get jobs, you know, different types of jobs on islands, because you don't have that type of infrastructure. There isn't many islands that I'm aware of that have, you know, a lot of computer programmers, things like that, or auto mechanics, you know, or people who build automobiles. So you don't have a lot of infrastructure on islands other than, you know, restaurant and hotel industry. That's why people came to the United States, because they had opportunities.
Well, then, what's happening with Hawaii? I mean, Hawaii is an island.
Hawaii is an island that was taken over by white folks many years ago, starting with Captain Cook, and then was taken over by Japanese. All right. If the same thing happened in Puerto Rico, then Puerto Ricans would still stay there. And additionally, Hawaii is quite larger than Puerto Rico, and it is the 50th state of the United States. When Puerto Rico becomes a state, then you'll have some investment in more infrastructure there as well.
So it was a curse that the white guy came into Hawaii and built the place up and gave them industry, but didn't go to Puerto Rico.
I think it was the white guy was a curse, man. There were things like that were introduced to the Hawaiians. Let me tell you, a Hawaiian told me when I lived there, who I worked with, who was in the United States military, the missionaries came in and said, pray, look up to the heavens and pray. And while they were up looking up to the heavens, the missionaries folks and their comrades were stealing the rugs from underneath them. So that's the way it went down, okay? That's the way we did our colonization, and that's our history. So
where are the groups of Hawaiians on the mainland? I mean, if we've got Puerto Ricans in New York and Florida, where are all the Hawaiians who don't like it there? Where are they coming here to settle? Because it's a lot better here.
Hawaiians in Hawaii are a protected class. They have special schools and special residential areas and special subsidies because they are Hawaiians. They are basically were wiped out from our germs. They were, you know, a lot of the people were depleted. But the people that remain that are true Hawaiians are subsidized by the Hawaiian government.
Ah, there it is, subsidized, retribution.
Well, right. You know, when you harm somebody, you generally have to pay for it.
All right, I want to move on a little bit here. Do you think the UCLA players that got arrested for shoplifting in China, our president said that they should have stayed there in jail because he's upset that there are other Americans in China in jail who didn't, you know, just political prisoners over there. And why did we bring back the UCLA players? I am the impression they were Americans anyway. You can get them back. But what do you think, Jeremiah? What do you think?
I haven't been following it too closely, but I think that, Well, one of the fathers says that the president helped, but why in a press conference, one of the players said, you know, thank you to the United States to help. I believe Trump or one of his colleagues did make a call in reference to those players. I think they did help out, but probably didn't help out as much as the father wanted him to help out. But I just think it's a disgrace to the Ball family and also the university. The kid is not even. I would say he grew up with privilege. His brother's already in the NBA. Father.
There are three kids.
Huh?
There are three of them.
Yeah. But I know the ball kid, I know he grew up with privilege, and he still has privilege right now. So why would you be in another country or even another state or even your city hometown stealing something? And it's a disgrace to the university as well. They should be suspended for more than a number of games for this season.
You don't think he should be suspended?
I would say that could happen. It's a good possibility for the university, but I doubt that it would happen. When people, just like I said about Jerry Jones last show, when you care about winning, you want to let go of your best players, or these people care about winning more than anything else. So,
all right. I just was curious what thoughts were on the players being released. you know, and you're right, it was an embarrassment to the United States, to the school, and UCLA, which in most people's minds in the United States is more of an upper class school, and to do that it was.
And it's an embarrassment to those three men, if they're men. They shouldn't have done it. If they did it, I don't even know for sure. Did they actually catch them doing it?
They were stealing sunglasses, high-priced sunglasses.
And the latest thing I heard, one of them's related to, is it LeBron James or one of them? Who, Frank?
They did. They did confess that they stole.
Oh, okay.
They were
and
stealing.
One of them
yeah.
was related. One of them is related to one of the big basketball stars. And the thing that bristled me a little bit is, and I'm just making an observation, not a judgment, is it looked like maybe their lawyers told them they had to do this. Read this script. Make your apology this way. I didn't like that. I would have loved to have each one of them feel more sincere, look in the camera and say, I screwed up. I shouldn't have done it. I apologize. Thank God I'm getting out of here. Thank you, Mr. President. Whether I agree with your policies or not, thank you for doing that. And I heard that one of them said that his father told him, don't thank the president. And that's when the president made, I think, kind of a childish statement and said, well, maybe I should have left him in jail. That's not appropriate either.
But you know something, though, Bruce?
What?
The thing is, he actually said prior to anything, maybe they won't apologize to me. You know, he prompted them
you're right.
to
you're
apologize.
Right. He did say that. And you don't do something expecting, well, I'm going to do it because I want an apology.
That's right.
With that. You do it because it's the right thing to do. But the right
there
thing for those three For the right thing for those three players to do would, in their own way, and as simple as they wanted to, thank whoever was involved to get them out of there. Boy, I know I would. I'd say, "Wow, get me out of here! Thank you very much."
All right.
But see, he wanted to gain notoriety with three young black men. That's
right.
What he did.
Don,
he wanted to get some PR, some public relations.
But it's not one-sided. The ones that did the deed should have been men enough, and it sounds like at least two of them, maybe all three, forgive me not knowing the nth detail, should have just plainly said in their own words as adult men, I'm sorry, I screwed up. I'm done.
That's
Thank
all,
you
that's
very
all
much
he has
for
to
getting
say.
Me out. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
it.
I agree.
That's it. Thank you very much. I won't do
it
again. I'm so appreciative. I'm glad to be back on American soil.
Yep.
Now
that's
cook me something so I can eat.
That's right. I'm back in America.
All right. Let's move on. We only got like a minute, 2 minutes left, so I don't get to talk about the Trump impeachment articles that were introduced by the Democrats because I know that would take a long time. So.
Okay, I have a 1 minute filler. May I share it?
Sure.
All right, Don, take this down. I got this for you and anybody else that's interested. Empower Flint, EMPOWERFLINT, empowerflint.org. You go on that, and there's an application to keep you up to date on water quality, water lead levels, nutrition, what's going on. All things about Flint water, my friend. That's for you.
That's great. And you know something? I got some friends of mine that I invited to speak to our program that are still drinking out of bottled water.
But just remember, guys, there's two sides to a story. Flint is not guiltless. They're innocent in some regards and were taken advantage of. But some of the management in Flint is probably gets some of the blame too. It's a team of doing good or doing
all right.
bad.
All right.
And they're the ones all indicted.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Hey, I would have loved to talk about Al Green and that $15 million that they set aside for the sexual harassment, because Al Green's one of the guys bringing the impeachment story or the papers to Trump, and he actually settled a lawsuit in 2008 for over $875,000 for a chick named Lucinda Daniels. I mean, unbelievable.
Okay. Well, we want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving as we close out to today. We got about 30 seconds.
Was that a chicken you were talking about?
Pardon me? Hello?
Was he talking about a chicken, or was he talking about a human being called a lady?
No. Al Green.
All right. Anyway, be back with this on January the 7th. We'll take a short break, and we won't come back till January the 7th. So I know many of you are listening, and we put that out there on the webpage. So we'll talk to you again on January 7th. Wanted to say happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Happy Thanksgiving to the panelists.
Yes.
We'll talk to you guys. Have a great
Thanksgiving, everybody. Don't eat too much. Eat enough.
How about
eat
those
enough.
Miami Hurricanes, baby?
Hurricanes,
baby.
Forget that.
Go Canes.
Go Canes. Okay,
guys. Don't get on that hitter bandwagon, please.
Yeah, go Blue.